Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, my name is Gary Mansfield. And this is the Ministry of Arts podcast, where each week I'll be speaking to a different artist. Now let's begin by bagging these bongos.
Yeah, right. Crazy.
Hello. And welcome to episode 191. And firstly, as ever, thank you to our Patreon supporters, without whom we would not be able to produce this podcast. And although this content is absolutely free for everyone, if you like what you hear and you'd like to give us a bit of support, then go over to our Ministry of Arts Instagram profile. You'll find a Linktree drop-down box which will direct you to our Patreon page. And for as little as £3 a month, the price of a cup of coffee, you can help us grow. That aside, today I'm going to take you to meet a good old buddy of mine and friend of the podcast, Miss Kate Knight. Kate's artistic life started as a dancer, a ballet dancer as well, no less. And that's not where I met her. I don't think point shoes and tights are my thing. I'm more of a long johns and work boots kind of guy. But where I did meet her was the Art Car Boot Fair. And we've been good buddies ever since. Kate was also in one of my face value exhibitions at Jealous Gallery, where she'd done an absolutely stunning collaboration with Dan Baldwin. And if I'd have been able, it would have definitely been one that was in my collection. And going from me curating an exhibition to Kate curating an exhibition, Kate has put her own group show together called On Gossip and the Glamour, which opens at the Touchbase Gallery in Folkestone on the 30th of September. So if you're in Folkestone, drop by and take a look. Come to that. Even if you're not in Folkestone, travel there and see the show. So rather than me tell you all about her, come and meet the lady herself, as I spoke over Zoom to Miss Kate Knight.
Now we've got you on today.
Yeah, so I wish I could be in my studio, so you could have had a look at my studio, but I've got no signal in that space.
You haven't?
Like there's a big, I mean, it's kind of good though, because it means that in order to look at my Wi-Fi, my phone, I have to hang out the window to try and get a reception. So it's good that I kind of just, it makes me get on with my work more rather than keep.
How far is it from your home?
It's about 20-minute walk.
Nice.
But I take my bike down now. So my bike's called Leddy.
Is it still the same bike you had before that you've done?
Yeah.
What was it, the Art Car Boot Fair, when they'd done it in the bikes? Yeah, so you have a little cycle to work, do you?
Yeah, I do. It's nice.
So how's your studio now? Is it all right? Next, they were doing a lot of building outside, weren't they?
Yeah, it's all scaffolding's down, and then there's that bloody big building opposite us now. So it's taken a little bit of our light, which is fine because it's down south, isn't it, Gary? So it's like really bright anyway. But like I say, I lost my signal. But you know,
there's
my studio,
no noise anymore.
No, all the noise has stopped. It's just the usual fights on Tontine Street because it's quite rough down there. So it's just like effing and jeffing and like, I won't say the other words, but you hear it all. I love it though.
Because
it's just, it's like, when you hear that sort of thing, it just grounds you again in your space, I think, a bit, you know? And it's called the B&B Project Space. Well, actually, my mate Matt has got that downstairs, but it was an old bed and breakfast.
Yeah.
So my studio is like a bedroom. Nice. I've got like a rose ceiling, but it's kind of falling apart, but we all love it because Brilliant. It's actually a real sort of rundown studio space rather than these other spaces that they've built, which are like office spaces and they're a bit clean and you don't want to get messy clinical, and that sort of. Yeah, definitely. But it's
and
it's,
you've got a good little buzz down in Folkestone, haven't you? A good little arty buzz down there.
I tell you what, Gary, you know, I did my MA at City and Guilds for a year, so I was commuting.
Yeah.
When I came back just after the year, obviously I was home at the weekend. So I was home every day, actually. But, you know, I was having a Saturday stroll, Sunday stroll. But I wasn't seeing many people. And then I get back to my studio after the MA and it was just, there's galleries opened up. You know, there's quite a lot of young people, which is just like, that's amazing. So, you know, you've got kids wanting to stay either like leaving school, secondary school here, they're actually wanting to stay now rather than go away. I mean, I run for the hills to of London course, as soon as I could.
Yeah.
But, and also, you've got people, you know, kids moving here because it's cheaper studio rent. Yeah. There's a real buzz happening. It's great. Better quality work.
You've got that little hook, haven't you, from sort of like Margate all the way round to Hastings, but that little corner of the country, people are moving away from London to go down there. And Folkestone, as you know, as much as it's a beautiful little town, I presume it's not quite as expensive as Margate is beginning to be.
No, it's actually, I think, the reverse. Folkestone's probably more expensive than
Margate.
I think it's logistics. I think Folkestone is smaller. It's a smaller project to make good, whereas Margate's a lot bigger. So, you know, it's taken them a little bit longer as regards getting things renovated. And of course, we had Roger Dahan, the multi-billionaire who owns Saga, who invested loads of money in this town and just, you know, is making it much nicer, much more desirable.
What, he's doing that at the moment?
He's been doing that since 2002, I think.
Is that you got a commission for Saga?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Oh, really? What, fire him?
I think so. They wouldn't tell me. I mean, I said, so this isn't meant to sound like ego-driven, but I didn't really want to do a commission for a cruise ship. I was like, what? No, man, I don't want to do that. And on the fourth time of asking me, they said to me, look, Kate, obviously, because I kept saying, who's it for? And they didn't want to tell me. In the end, they said, oh, look, they'll say they want you to know who it is. It's Saga. And I went, oh, I'll do it. Because I'm a bit of a home bird, you know. And I thought, well, you know, it's my hometown. Okay, I'll do that for Saga for sure. Oh, God, I've never seen such an amazing boat. I just thought, what an idiot. Okay, it's absolutely stunning. It's like this boutique bijou luxury liner. And we went to the party and they christened the boat. They had the amazing like Welsh miners singing.
Brilliant.
As well. And then Camilla Parker Bowles turned up, lover or a hater. And and we saw Jules Holland live with Ruby Turner, who's got the most amazing voice.
She's cool, isn't
she? It was just, and the drink was flowing. it was amazing.
Nice.
It was exceptional day, yeah. It was really nice to see those works as well in situ. So
you're
well
glad
called.
They was persistent?
Yeah, definitely. I got a bit of RSI though in the shoulder because when it started, I was meant to get a year to complete the artworks, but with all the two in a throw, and it ended up 4 months.
Wow.
So that was a lot of work for, you know, there's a short space of time and to do a lot of work. So, but I'm not complaining. It was brilliant.
So how come he's investing in Folkestone?
It's his hometown.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay. That's
Yeah. So his dad was Sydney Dahan. And they started off with just a little hotel in Folkestone. I think it was called, what was it called? The hotel. I can't remember what hotel was called. So him and another partner called Fred Frost opened up this little hotel and they started to send coaches up north and then bring in clientele down to Folkestone.
Nice.
And then when Sydney died, Roger took over the company and then he just took it to another level and it went catastrophic. So that's why he wanted to sort of, you know, give Folkestone a bit more hope, because when obviously Thatcher came into power and, you know, she got the Eurotunnel go ahead and she was saying to everyone in Folkestone and, you know, surrounding, you're going to get so much business, it's going to be booming, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And of course it didn't. Overnight, you know, Folkestone went from being a popular tourist destination because we used to do the ferry crossings to no one. Ghost town.
That's unlike the Tories to be liars, isn't it?
Oh, I know, isn't it? Who'd have thought it? God. I was going to say a really rude quote then, but I'm not going to.
it's a beautiful little town, isn't it? I mean, I've only been up there a couple of times. The last time was the Art Car Boat Fair, which was, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, possibly even more.
It was about that, wasn't it? I think it was about that, yeah.
And it's got a good looking... The town's nice. It's got like an, if I can remember correctly, it's got like an old town and a new town, hasn't it?
Yeah, the new town's not so great. The old town is where Rogers invested his money. So you've got the old high street, you've got Tontine Street where my studio is. And then he's now bought the Harbour Arm, which has got loads of little businesses on now. You can, you know, eat, drink, be merry.
It's got quite an odd looking hotel just on the dockside there, hasn't it? And there's a story behind that hotel. I can't remember what it is, but someone told me something about that hotel.
There's a few stories about that hotel. I used to work there, Gary.
Oh, did you? Maybe it was you who told me.
I was a barmaid there. I mean, it was my first job that I could get as a barmaid. My first job was working at Free Cook's Bakery. And then my second job, as soon as I turned 18, I was like, I'm getting bar work. I can't work in a Free Cook's Bakery. Eating all the bloody pies. So, yeah, my first job, I was a barmaid there. My brother was, I've got three brothers, but my brother Leon was a security guard and my brother Lou was a chef there. So it was really in-house. And what happened with that hotel was the previous hotel that stood there was this stunning old, I think, Edwardian hotel, which was really beautiful, but I think it was about to need a lot of money to renovate. So there happened to be like a oops fire. The hotel bursting got built and it's meant to look like a ship, but it's like everybody hates that place apart from people who find it quite a kind of attraction because they do like cabaret nights there. So you get Londoners coming down going, yeah, it is. And so you get Londoners coming down going, we've got to go to Hotel Bursting for cabaret night. I mean, they used to do like country and Western weekends and all this sort of stuff.
Is it one of those where it's so bad, it's good?
For people not working there, yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But don't get me wrong, we all had a really good time. It was a really good camaraderie between us all. I love bar work. I loved it. I don't know if I'd want to do it now, but I did love bar work. It's great. But yeah, so that's the Bursting.
Good. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's a change from Folkestone.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Several questions I've got for each artist. The first being, how would you explain what you do to people that wouldn't know your work?
Well, recently from the MA, it was quite eye-opening, and I don't want to do a tagline, but I think I'm going to have to because otherwise I'll waffle. And I think I take materiality and I use materiality in order to animate the inanimate and give voice to material. But in that process of giving voice to a materiality, really what I'm doing is giving voice to myself. So the material is like a conduit for me to speak through. But when I sit with materials a lot, and I try and I know obviously I don't sit there actually talking to the material, but there's a visual communication that goes on between myself and the material, and I just sit and I look at the material. So yeah, I try and find its voice, and I see what relation I have to that materiality.
Well, you mentioned about your MA just now. So you started an MA, was it just prior to lockdown?
Yeah.
You started it at the worst point anyone could ever start a course. But your work has, it seems to have sort of divided from beforehand, because you was using colour and material a lot, and your work was quite illustrative. And now you've sort of, this is only my perception from what I've seen.
Go for it.
It feels like you've divided your work, one into the more aesthetic and material side and the other illustrative side. Would that be correct?
Gary, that's absolutely correct. But before I went into the more commercial side of my work, I hadn't taken up art when I was at school. You know, I did the art that we were meant to do. I think we had one class a week. I was a ballet dancer. This is going to be a long-winded story, but I'll try and make it snappy.
I'm all good for long-winded stories.
So, you know, I studied
especially
dance
if they involve belly dancers.
Yeah. You know, I said ballet, not belly.
Oh, damn.
So, yeah, when I was three, I started ballet classes. My mum put me into ballet classes, yeah. And it was great, and I enjoyed it, and it's good discipline and fitness and stuff like that. And you got to wear pink, but I didn't like that colour when I was that age. Anyway, I digress. I then had a bad time at secondary school. I'd say I'd started to have a bad time at primary school, actually, like when we were about to leave, and then I had a bad time at secondary school. And I found that dance was that place that I could go where I was actually really good at something.
Yeah.
And I had my own agency. I was confident. As soon as I would get into the dance studio and put pointe shoes on, I became really powerful. It felt like a superpower.
Yeah.
And all of the day of school was forgotten.
Do you think it was like a persona, if you like?
I think the real me was able to come out, and
nice.
I didn't have to like hide it.
Pretend.
And I didn't have to, you know, confront or fight or, you know, battle with anything. I just myself actually.
Brilliant.
Dancing. So when I went to, this is going to end up at the question. When I went to, I then went to London Studio Centre, and suddenly, you know, I got on with people, like, and I thought, oh, it wasn't me then. And my love for ballet just went. It didn't go overnight, but, you know, I just thought, this isn't for me anymore. I've got no fight. There's nothing to fight against. And I needed that. And really, I think when you're going to choose some sort of vocation like that, it shouldn't be, or for me it wasn't enough to just like it. I needed the fight if I was going to do ballet, so it wasn't enough. Anyway, at the time, my boyfriend at the time took me to my first ever gallery, and we went to the National Gallery, Trafalgar Square.
Yeah,
it's Trafalgar Square, isn't it?
Yeah.
And we walked into the first room, and there was this massive painting. And I remember it being really Baroque, really chiaroscuro, but I can't remember who it was. It could have been Caravaggio, but I'm not sure. But I was blown away. I mean, brilliant. Every fiber of my being, I got goosebumps. I felt emotion. I thought I was going to cry. You know, I was so overwhelmed and in awe of what could be achieved in paint. I thought, and that moment, I just went, I'm giving up dance because this dance doesn't do this for me anymore.
Yeah, nice.
And I thought, I'm giving it up. And I went back to my mum and dad. I said, yeah, I'm giving up dance. And they're like, you're bloody not.
The amount of time and effort we've put into this.
Exactly. So they said to me, look, all right. They thought about it because they thought they can't force me to obviously carry on dancing. They said, you've got to do one job, like one job outside of what you've been doing. And then my brother rang me at the hotel bursting. And he went, Muchos, you've got to get down to the hotel bursting because they're auditioning girls for cruise ship liners and holiday places. And I went, no, I'm not coming. He went, no, get your pointe shoes, get your stuff. You're coming down. Anyway, I turn up for the audition. I knew I was going to get it, Gary. I was just like, oh, God, no. So I did this job at Camber Sands Leisure Park for a year. And my mum and dad were driving me there, and it's beautiful Camber Sands, absolutely stunning.
Yeah, I love it.
And there's this lodge where we were told to go, and it's right near the beach. It's beautiful. And I don't know if I'm going to back be politically incorrect, but I'm obviously correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember speaking to the guy about this, and he prefers this terminology. So we turn up at the lodge, and standing outside was a guy who was about 7 foot. I think he was 7'6" or something.
Wow.
Next to him was a man dressed up as a clown. And then there was Brian, who was a dwarf. We're going, welcome. And I was like, oh my God. And I was only a kid. I was 17 at this point. And I'd never been in a situation where it was just sort of quite obscure and kind of different walks of life. But it was a brilliant bloody year. It was actually really good. And had a lot of fun, but I still wanted to do art. That was it. And then I went to South Kent College, which was a local little art school, and just so happened to have these exceptional teachers who actually taught you how to draw and paint. Yeah. I'm getting there, Gary. Sorry, you can.
No, you're quite all right. You're quite all right. That's what it's all about.
Yeah. So I spent 4 years there because I had to do a GCSE in art and a foundation at the same time, and then I did the HNC, and then they asked me to stay another year because they needed a certain amount of students. Because I said I'm going to apply for Chelsea, and one of my tutors said you'll never get in. I went, I'm definitely going to get in now. And so they made me stay one more year because otherwise the course wasn't going to run. So I stayed the extra year because I didn't want, obviously, them all losing their bloody jobs.
Yeah.
And I thought, what's another year to be around these amazing teachers? And then I got into Chelsea, and I was making fine art, contemporary work, painting. So I'm getting to it now. And so that work was more akin to what I'm making again now.
Yeah.
But as the sort of... the time went on, I had a kind of ultimatum for myself. I always wanted to apply for the Royal Academy, and I didn't in the final year at Chelsea because my dad died. So I came home to Folkestone, and then I just buried myself away for a couple of years in a little studio with the Creative Foundation, and I just got on with my work, and I hid. There was no social media then, so I kept all my work a secret. And then I did this show, and in that year I'd been selected for Artist of the Day by my Professor Mo Throp at Flowers Gallery.
Nice.
And I was a runner-up at the Marmite Prize for Painting in 2010. So that all happened in 2010. I'd applied for the Royal Academy in 2009, and I got shortlisted in interview for the last 40 people. And then I got the letter to say, we can't offer you a place at the moment, Kate, but you're on our shortlist.
Nice.
That was enough for me. I was just like, that's wicked. I'm really happy with that because I'd achieved something. I wanted to know I could get an interview. I didn't necessarily need to get on the course. And it was that decision of obviously not getting on there that I decided to open up an art supply shop in Folkestone. And it's something my mum and I went into together. And I was gifted a drawing board from one of my buyers who used to buy my oil paintings that was an architect's drawing board. And I thought, well, whilst I'm sitting in the shop, I might as well do a few watercolors. And I started to paint these birds. And then over a period of time, people kept coming in wanting to buy my artworks that were just more suited for that sort of space.
Yeah.
And I eventually started selling so much work from that little drawing board that I decided to get rid of the art supplies, and I turned it into my gallery.
Nice.
And I so from 2000.
So you jogged your mum on out of your joint business.
Off you go. No, she is well laughing. But so yeah, I just started to make more commercially viable work, and of course then I had to keep a shop open, pay the bills, and all those things. So that's what happened. That side of things took over.
Yeah.
And I've for quite a few years now, I've always had this battle because, you know, it was trying to divide those two things, and it was all sort of slipping into one stream. And I just I felt a little bit like I was getting trapped. And because I've got a business, I got some government funding. And that's when I thought, I'm doing the MA. I'm going to use this money to go and do my MA and get back in touch with what my soul needs.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, so... God, that was convoluted and long.
No, that's what's needed. That was absolutely perfect.
Because it's just knowing where I'm coming from, isn't it, a bit more.
I got asked to do these like a masterclass, and it's for my mate Alison Lapper.
Yeah.
So she asked me to do it, first of all the podcast and then these workshops after. So I agreed. She went, oh, there's only three of you doing it at the moment. And I went, who's that? She went, it's you, Mark Quinn and Rankin. And I was like, how the fuck did I get in this little triangle?
Gary, that's amazing. Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, isn't it?
Superstar.
Cool. Oh, no, I don't know why I'm speaking to the likes of you.
Are you a bit... Well, you're here for the belly dancing.
Yeah, love shit out of that. Creativity, Kate. Was there creativity in the home growing up?
Was there creativity in my home?
Mm.
Loads. My mum has a naturally creative way about her. Like, she used to do creative writing, but she's a miner's daughter. So it was never really offered up to her.
Yeah.
But the thing is, if you've got it, there's no holding that back. It will find its way in something, whether it's, you know, how you decorate your house, or, you know, just how you are, how you dress, all those things. And my dad actually was a singer. And so, yeah, we're a really singing household, which has actually come into my work recently as well, that I've realised I need my stuff to sing. And I don't mean physically, I mean visually.
Good.
There's something that happens to materials when it sings.
Yeah.
You know it does. There's a glowing, isn't there? It's a magic.
Definitely.
Yeah, my dad, yeah, so there was creativity. And then I remember my mum used to sit me down at the kitchen table, and she'd give me the inside of a loo roll, and I'd sit there painting that.
Nice.
And she said I'd sit for hours doing that. I'd be well in my element. So yeah, it was there. There was. Yeah. I was lucky.
Yeah, so many of people I've spoken to on here have that, you know, it was in them as a child, and then others just get introduced to it, or vice versa. You know?
It's in every child, isn't it? It's in everything, you know, creativity. Look at magpies, you know, they're creative. Like, it's about developing skills, isn't it? It's about communication.
You use magpies a little bit in your work occasionally, don't you?
I do. It's about to become one of the more conceptual pieces that, like, you know, one of my paintings. I'm curating a group show in September with six other amazing female artists on gossip and the glamour.
Nice.
And it's using the origins of those terms, gossip. Before patriarchy of the church turned it into something negative, was actually women together sharing their stories and sharing their crafts. And of course, you know, the church doesn't want women empowered. So, you know, they didn't want them coming together. They certainly didn't want them coming together to discuss maybe what's going on with townsmen.
Yeah.
So yeah, they turned that gossip being a kind of negative thing on its head. So we're reclaiming that. And glamour is actually an old Scottish word, and it's about casting spells.
Okay.
So if you look up glamouring, there is a description of a man having a beautiful woman, and he's dating her. Obviously, he wasn't dating, he was courting back then. And he would approach the local witch and ask her to perform a glamouring spell on his beloved and make her look ugly to every other man.
Oh, wow.
And vice versa, people would come to her with maybe some fool's gold or something really ugly, and she would make it beautiful, and then they would sell it on. So a lot of the women that I've chosen to you know, curate and show with, we all deal with some sort of illusion within our work, and we all very much deal with craft, and craft as tradition, and craftsmanship being very important to our process and to the aesthetic.
And when's that?
I'm really excited. That's in September in Folkestone.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Nice.
Some of them, one of the girls, Cyan Costello, amazing artist, she's coming from Ireland to the show.
Oh, and, nice.
Yeah, I know, it's lovely. And then another artist, Anna Kazakoff, and one of the girls is Twinkle Chawton. She's the editor of Margate Mercury.
I love Twinkle.
Oh, you know, of course you know Twinkle. So yeah, Twinkle's part of it. And my old school friend, Sonia McDuff, and an artist called Sarah Trillo, whose work I've been following since I saw it at Terra Nexus in London.
Yeah.
Do you know Kelly Sweeney's work?
I do. I know the name.
So she works with very kind of witchy subject matter. And she's the poster girl, actually. So she's got this amazing painting of this woman holding these two different colour balls. and you're seeing the back of her, and it's like she's about to do this like massive power, like pew! It's awesome. And so I'm really excited about that. Really excited. Yeah.
So we spoke earlier about the division in your work. So you've got the illustrative side, which would that be the bread and butter of your day to day?
Absolutely.
The more material focused side.
I'd say more conceptual, materialism. Yeah,
I've noticed that has come into itself over the last couple of years while you've been doing your MA. You've always had bright, intense colours in your work, but only occasionally. They'll only appear on one part of your work. It won't be a colourful painting or a drawing or what have you.
Yeah.
But now colour seems to be the focus of that artwork, depending on what it is.
Well, Gary, I was like, we're talking about magic and we're talking about how I love my material to sing because I want to give it voice. Because when I was little, I felt I didn't have a voice. You know, I found it very difficult to express myself. I certainly with strangers. And I wouldn't consider myself shy. I was just shy around people I didn't know.
Yeah.
And then I'd have moments of frustration where I couldn't communicate. And so I would end up biting my hand. So there were these primal acts that were coming out, and I was revisiting those acts in my work. So there was the disenchantment going on, but also the colour brings enchantment. It's the point where it starts to sing for me.
Yeah.
The material has a voice. And I don't know why. It's just, I was chatting to another article, Eilet, the other day on this sort of academic group I was part of called the Contemporary Art Academy with Xavier Ellis and Sam Jackson, you know his stuff, and my old tutor Matthew Gibson, who first taught me art, and it's come full circle 20 years later. Anyway, we were chatting and I was looking at Peter Violet's work, and she painted these swans, and she said, oh Kate, she said to the group, they're called mute swans, so they don't make a sound. And I said, well, it's really funny, Eilet, because I'm looking at them and I keep hearing this like blop, 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 blop sound. And she went, that's really weird, Kate, because when they flap their wings, that's the only sound they make. And it's like that.
Excellent.
And so I think from having a singing upbringing, it's a visual for me.
Yeah.
Do you know, if that makes sense.
Perfect.
That's dyslexia. on the course, I love fluorescence, Gary. I love the fact that it's this sort of, it feels like such a new alien colour.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of like being in Folkestone because, you know, boys with like boy racers would put the colour under their car. Yeah. And it's workmen. It's a colour that we're meant to be drawn to because it's a warning or it's showing something off. I mean, it could be a showgirl sign, couldn't it? Yeah. So it's just this attention seeking colour. And I thought, I'm going to make a pastel because I love engaging with the tradition of making, because I feel like I'm speaking with the past when I do that. So, and that kind of ties in with the wishbone, which I really would love if I can tell you about that piece in a minute.
Yeah.
And I made it into this pastel, this very feminine, soft, baby powdered smelling material that I could use to draw with. And it took quite a while. It sometimes takes a while for me to just sit with the material to understand it a bit more. So I've made this pastel, and an object in itself is just beautiful. And as I say, it smells of baby powder. And I just put it on this piece of paper, and I put this A4 sheet of paper in the studio on the MA at City and Guilds. And I sat looking at it whilst I was doing other stuff, and my eye just kept being drawn to it. Yeah. I just thought, why am I keep being drawn back to just this piece of colour on a bit of paper? So I got my rubber and I rubbed out a section of it, and the paper just started to glow and hum.
Yeah.
I thought, oh my God, that's what was behind it. That's what it was saying. Come over here, look at me, like unveil something, like unveil what's behind.
Yeah.
So I made this piece that was based on moths. That's another story. It's about this psychological heaviness, burden, and I relate that to moths. There's a beautiful section in Arundhati Roy's Goddess Small Things where she talks about a dorsal moth landing on the heart.
Nice.
And when they fall in love, the moth alights and you're free again for a moment.
Yeah, beautiful.
And And so I did these silhouettes of these moths and I experimented to put them on this piece of paper. I then covered the paper with this beautiful pastel. I peeled the moths back. And again, I sat. And my friend Archie came in from the course and he went, Kate, I went, what? He said, it's buzzing, right? I was like, yeah, it's buzzing. He said, Kate, that paper is turning from white to violet as we're staring at it. And I was like, oh my God. I felt like I cast a spell.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was magic. And then all of the sort of, all of the powder was just falling to the floor.
Wow.
And it left this incredible streak, like line of neon. And it's as if the moths had like left their bodily.
Yeah.
They didn't need it anymore. They crossed that portal and they were free. The body was no longer required. It was just a really beautiful moment.
And do you think you'll use the pigment dust on the floor?
Yeah, I left it. It is a part of the artwork. It doesn't get taken away. And what I really enjoyed was actually people started to tread in it. And so there was this act of something so beautiful and something so sacred, and people were just treading on it. And it then the profane came in and that area became disenchanted.
Yeah.
So like I'm always playing with this enchantment and disenchantment. And it's something I think I've always done. And I didn't realize until I did the MA how to put that into words, but also to bring it to my consciousness rather than it just being sat back in the shelf somewhere back there that I didn't completely understand.
Yeah.
But then you don't want to break the spell by understanding something too much either, do you?
No, of course. Like, then it becomes mundane then, doesn't it?
Exactly. Well, you understand it. There's no need to make. I make because I want to understand something more. Like I want to know, or I want to put that feeling that I'm not quite sure what it is, that feeling of displacement. I want to put it out there in the material world because it's too difficult to speak of, or I don't know how to.
With that in mind, tell us about the wishbones.
Yes. So can I do the description by telling you the story?
By all means.
So we're on the MA. We managed to attend the course pretty much throughout lockdown because it's such a small school and it's beautiful because of that. I mean, you get such attention. And we had only 3 months where we couldn't attend. They were just like, no, we literally can't open up the school now. You've all got to go home for 3 months. And actually, it was a little bit of a blessing because I need quiet time, Gary. I can't think when there's so much going on. I can't have interruptions every 5 minutes and just look at this, look at that. And I'm like, oh, my God. So I went back into my studio. And for me, the wishbone is symbolic of my dad.
Nice.
So we used to do the tradition. It was always me and my dad. He'd save the wishbone from the chicken and we would break the wishbone together and make a wish. So I've tried to get that wishbone into my work a few times over the years and it just has never felt quite right. It just seemed like a illustration of that moment rather than a feeling. And I sat in the studio and I thought, I'm going to cast this wishbone and I want to cast it in wax. So I made this little cast. It was really crap and it was too delicate to even work because I tried to get it out the cast and it just kept breaking. And I thought, oh God, I'm an idiot. I'm sitting here with a wishbone. I'm just going to dip this. Why am I not just dipping this wishbone? So I did this fleshy wax and I've used wax quite a lot in my work because it's so malleable. It forms really well. So I started to dip this wishbone and in this process, I just thought, oh, this is odd because this is feeling like a ceremony now because it was my intent. It was like a moment of communication. And I was listening to something, I won't mention another podcast, but they were talking about Nina Simone's Lilac Wine and how that song is about necromancy. It's bringing something back from the dead through a conduit. Yeah. In this case, being lilac wine. So she's getting drunk, right, on lilac wine, and she thinks she sees her lover. I was using that wishbone to try and communicate with my dad. And I didn't realize really how much I was until I chatted to my mum that night about what happened in the studio, because it felt quite, I know this is going to be odd for a few people, but it felt very spiritual.
Yeah.
It felt kind of psychic. It was.
That's between you and the moment, isn't it?
It is. And I think when work's really working, that happens, something else takes over and you're no longer present in your body. You're just another material. So that night I was chatting to mum and she just went to me, why do you never make work about me? Why is it always your dad? I thought, why is that? And of course, you know, I get things quite quickly sometimes, but sometimes it takes me a while to digest things. And I woke up the next day and I just went, Mum, I know why, because you're not dead.
Yeah. Exactly. If you are missing her, you pick up the phone or go and see her.
Exactly. And so I'm when I'm making work about my dad, I'm having a kind of...
She loves a bit of attention, doesn't she, your mum?
I know, doesn't she? But I'm having communication with my dad. That's what I'm doing. And there's... can I tell you about this amazing cheese rolling?
Go on.
Have you seen... Right, there's a... Gary, there's a Netflix documentary called We Are the Champions. Have you seen it?
No, I'll write it down.
I highly recommend this documentary. They're bonkers, but they're brilliant. So there's only four of them. The first one is about cheese rolling. And so do you ever find that things start to, you know, synchronize?
Yeah.
So I've done all this, and then I'm watching that documentary that night, and I was just like, this is bloody brilliant. People leaping off a hill and like injuring themselves, dislocating shoulders. And the guy said, the narrator says, traditions are a form of magic because traditions are a way of talking to the past, of speaking to our ancestors in a language that they created.
Yeah.
And when you participate in tradition, you are casting a spell that lets you talk directly to a bygone era.
Brilliant.
And it just summed all of that up. Yeah. And that's how the wishbone came about. And then I made this beautiful plinth for this wishbone. And he's called Morpheus, Sleepwalk, which is the god of sleep. Yeah. So he was the belly. When I did the installation for my MA called Promise Hour, he became the kind of umbilical cord of that show. And in front of that work was the moths, which I called mother, in the shape of an egg that had just been cut off at the bottom to allow the powder to fall.
Just to appease your mum.
Yeah.
There you go, now. Shut up.
There you go. it's so profound for me. And then there was the little reliquies of me biting into wet clay that I'd formed out of not talking sticks. I had another moment with that talking stick. I was doing these paintings of talking sticks. Again, it just felt like I was illustrating something rather than enacting and feeling. And I sat there with this stick that I'd made out of ceramic clay, and it was still wet. And I thought, okay, what's the not talking stick to me? Because we know what a talking stick is.
It's a tool
of diplomacy. And I thought, so what do I feel when I can't talk? I feel frustration and I bite. And so it was disgusting, but I bit into this wet clay and it completely vocalized. It just expressed it. It was such a cyclical experience.
Brilliant.
And I just thought, and there it is. That's done. I put that aside for the year and waited on it to the end of the show. And then those pieces went into there as well. And then the hands, because these are our craft.
It's amazing how something so mundane as just biting a bit of clay can answer all those questions or tie up the loose ends.
Brilliant. Absolutely. And express it as well. And it's so subtle, but when people see it, it's like this moment of joy and like, is it, isn't it, you know? It's like the little wishbone. People were fascinated, and there's all these big works everywhere, and this tiny little wishbone was just, everybody has a story about a wishbone. And interestingly, Gary, the history of the wishbone, it should never have been snapped. It's an American thing.
Oh, yeah.
They snap a wishbone. Historically, we would rub the wishbone. So there's this idea of allowing other people to have wishes that I love. You know, you're not snapping it and you're not breaking it. You know, there's a possibility, there's a tenderness to that of... There's also not a taking, that's mine and I'm having that wish.
Yeah.
It's you're asking, you know, there's not that entitlement with that act of rubbing the wishbone, like the genie, Aladdin's lamp, you know.
Now you're speaking about your work, that division that we mentioned earlier, it is as if the more conceptual side of your work is based in and around tradition. I can see it now as you're speaking. Do you know Ben Edge? His is very directly traditional. But you might find something amongst Ben Edge. He looks back at pagan and village tradition. So I reckon you'll get something from there.
Cool.
You're very different from Ben Edge, but you've got, you know, auras crossover, if you like.
This is it, Gary. This is why I've brought together this group of women, because I know they all do this way of working.
Yeah.
You know, they all have an interest in the idea of... So when I was at secondary school, I was called a witch. They used to call all the boys and girls used to say, I'm a witch. And I used to think, why is that? But it's because I had agency. I didn't need anyone. And that freaked them out, I think, you know, and that ostracized me from them. And then on my MA, I was in my first tutorial with Andrew Grassi. So him and that, right, I have used gesso for a long time and I make traditional genuine gesso. And I'm not blowing my own trumpet, but I make it really well, Gary. Like it's, I used to do egg tempera painting. So Andrew Grassi does this photorealistic egg tempera painting. He's a phenomenal painter and he's a really cool guy. And he said to me, Kate, your work's quite witchy. But he meant it in the nicest, nicest way. And he had just met me, Gary. Within minutes, he went, there's witchy vibes off your work.
Wow.
And I thought, cool. I was really like, yes. And I just thought, yeah, own it. Own that. Embrace it. And craft, yeah, I like labour. I like hard work. Yeah. Well, and Gary, I mean, that's the tradition of witchcraft. It's women who craft, who have empowerment, who had their own agency, who were able to make their own money. And that's what made the church scared.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a wonderful book of fiction. I mean, there's loads of books that you can read on this, but there's a wonderful book of fiction by, and it's called Circe, Madeline Miller.
Got you.
And it's mythological. It's the retelling of the goddess Circe, which is a demigoddess. And it was about how everybody played down her power. So she didn't think she was powerful. So she was just like, I'm getting out of this town. Screw you, King Dad. And she goes on this island on her own and discovers that actually she is the most powerful. And she does this through all the herbs and the mixing of potions and knowing the land. It's an amazing book.
If there was you and five other artists, Kate, past and present, excluding your show coming up,
I've already got them in. That's
what would
all right.
your ideal group show be?
There is an artist from the like 20th century called Gertrude Abercrombie, and I don't think she's that well heard of, but she was a Chicago. Do you know her?
I think You're so. Nodding. I think she's so.
She was a Chicago-based artist, and she was part of the jazz scene, but she didn't hang out with other artists. She hung out with the likes of Dizzy Gillespie and all these jazz greats.
I know the name, and I know the story.
Oh my God, I love her paintings. There's magic in them, there's symbolism, and there's very much the feminine divine. And she is it's surrealism, but she's amazing. And then I would like Fra Angelico, 15th century artist. You know Fra Angelico's work?
I do.
Fra Angelico, 15th century artist, because like, they're the best tablet paintings. They bring me to tears when I look at them. I can't explain why. I'm not religious. I don't know why I cry when I look at these paintings, but I do. I think they're so sublime and they're so beautifully executed and they're so serene and peaceful and quiet that they just, they transport me.
I had another artist on here a few weeks ago who was mentioning exactly the same thing.
They are. They're just magnificent.
Oh, the misfortune teller. It was him.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, cool. And then my tutor, but also he's the reason I went to Sistine Guilds, because I've admired his work for so long and I didn't realise, why I was so drawn to his work. And we have quite a lot of connections. Not a lot of connections in life, but there's some similarities there and it's like being voiced through the work. And that's Robin Mason. And I would highly recommend having a chat with him, Gary. He's an incredible artist, a beautiful human being. And we had a school meeting one day. I've got to tell you this little anecdote. And one of the other artists on the course went, Robin, you're always so happy. It's just so lovely. You're always joyful. And in the background, his wife went, no, he's bloody not.
I know Robin, that feeling. Yeah,
Robin's amazing. And then Louise Bourgeois, of
Perfect.
Course, because she's just like an idol. She's one of my idols. And then I think the painter Dorothea Tannim, but then maybe Ty Shani, I don't know. But Dorothea Tannen was one of those first artists that I looked at when I started taking up art. And I just thought, I feel how she's painting. Like as a younger woman, when I was a teenager, I thought I can relate to the girls in her paintings. And it's just the whole fantasy of it as well. I'm a bit of a sucker for surrealism. I love it.
Nothing wrong with that.
But in the best sense, not the old Salvador Dali, but you know. Yes, So they're my five artists.
That sounds perfect. And Kate, if you wasn't an artist, what would you like to be?
I really love cooking.
Nice.
I love it. And I love watching chef programs. And I think something to do with food. I think it would be something to do with food. Failing that, it would have to be just making gesso for people all the time.
That's but not yeah, a bad thing, though.
I think chefing, I think there's some real similarities in chefing and art. You know, it's,
I know you're
it's
only
so...
joking about making the gesso, but if yeah. if you was able to do it, I'm sure the artists that use it would want a really good one, and that's not a bad thing at all.
Yeah, it's hard work, and people ask me how to make gesso, and I go to them, oh, do you want to go and get a bit of pen and paper? And they went, Jesus, is it that hard? And I go, yeah. So I always make them ask me twice or three times before I start to tell them not all my secrets, but some of them.
Yeah, most of them. And Kate, what have you got coming up?
So I'm working towards the group show now. So on Gossip and the Glamour, and I don't, that's, it starts on the 29th of September.
Oh, good. This will be out round about then, actually.
Yeah, oh, that's amazing. And so 29th of September, and it's only like a four-day exhibition, and it's at Touch Base Gallery in Folkestone.
Nice.
I know people think it's a long way to come, but it's a 54-minute train trip from King's Cross to Folkestone. Yeah. So it's really, yeah, it's not. And then it's running till the 2nd of October.
Brilliant.
And then we'll go from there. We'll see what else comes.
And where can anyone find what you're doing, be it website or social media?
Okay, so for my fine art website, do you want me to actually say the website? I guess I do.
Yeah. How else are they going to answer the question?
So it's www.katenightartist.com.
Yeah.
And then if you're more interested in my illustrative work, it's www.katenightillustration.com.
Got you.
Instagram is Night Painter, and it is a play on Knight Rider. And then on Vero, it's Kate Knight Artist. That's it.
Excellent.
Lucky L.
Well, Kate, that's all my questions asked.
Amazing, Gary.
And this has been pipeline for so long.
It has.
And I'm glad we finally got to do it.
Brilliant. All right, Gorge.
See you later,
my
darling.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, hope you enjoyed that episode of the Ministry of Arts podcast. So we wasn't dictated to by advertisers, we decided from the offset to go ad-free, which means obviously we had to self-fund. So we set up the Ministry of Arts Patreon page. And without that support, we would not be able to produce this podcast. So if you like what you hear and you're able to support the podcast, just go over to the Ministry of Arts Instagram profile. You'll find a Linktree drop-down box, which will direct you straight to our Patreon page. And for the price of a cup of coffee, you can help keep us growing week by week. But if you're not able to do that, that's fine, because this content is free for everyone. But leaving a review on whichever platform you listen to your podcast, that really does help us get noticed and anyone else looking for an art podcast. Or even giving us a positive shout out on your social media. Everything is appreciated. But either way, thanks for listening. And until next week, ta-da.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.